The following is a class given by His Holiness Srila Satsarup Das Goswami on November 20th, 1991 at the Brahmanda Ghat in Vrindavan.
I feel a bit awkward to be speaking because you are all very much directly realized in the Parikram and visiting the Leela of Krishna, and I'm just coming out from the Krishna Balaram Mandir to speak before so many veteran Parikram devotees, especially my Sannyasi God brothers. But duty is to speak, and in one sense we're all qualified to speak about Krishna on the basis of Prabhupada's books and practicing sadhana bhakti and whatever our service may be. So this is Brahmanda Ghat, and this is the place where Krishna ate dirt. So I'd like to read a small section where this pastime is described. It occurs in the Krishna book in chapter 8, and it occurs after other pastimes in which we hear that the baby Krishna is very mischievous.
Everyone sit down and keep quiet.
We can all remember when we first heard the Krishna book, it was somewhat shocking to hear how naughty Krishna was, our worshipable Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he used to steal yogurt from all the neighbors' houses, and if he couldn't find any yogurt, he would urinate on the floor and pass stool on the floor and pinch the children. Surprising and yet somehow delightful, even when we first heard it, that Krishna is so playful. And then we also heard that rather than being actually outraged by this behavior, the neighbors, who are all eternal pure devotees of Krishna in the Vatsalya Rasa, loved this so-called intrusion of Krishna into their houses, take their things. And they simply waited for him to come back again to do it again. When is Krishna coming? So this is described in this chapter. And in order to increase the fun, one time some of the elderly gopis came to Mother Yasoda, and as Prabhupada expresses it, they lodged complaints. So that's a very wonderful scene also, where they're telling all the things that Krishna does, how he steals the butter, yogurt, feeds it to the monkeys. So they're feigning seriousness, and Mother Yasoda is listening seriously also to the complaint. And the alleged culprit is sitting there, Krishna, looking very innocent. And then the gopis finally say, and even now, while we're leveling all these charges against him, just look at him. He looks so innocent, as if he hasn't done anything. So Mother Yasoda is unable to punish him. She sees his a sweet face and pitiable face, and so dependent on her. And she just mildly smiles, and she did not chastise him. That's just prior to this pastime of eating dirt. As with any of the rasas with Krishna, the friendly rasa, or rasa with friends, sakya rasa, or the vatsalya rasa, or the manhuya rasa, we never can compare them to the material version of that in the material world, in human relationships. Although all the human relationships come from Krishna, still they're so impure, incomplete. We're especially given this warning when we try to understand the Madhurya pastimes, which are love affairs between man and woman. So in the material world, the taste of this is based on lust. And so we have a tendency to think, when we hear about Krishna and the gopis, even despite our attempts otherwise, that this is the same thing. There's some kind of lusty affair being described here. Krishna must be lusty, and the girls also. So later in the Krishna book, Sukadeva Goswami and since him, the acharyas take great pains to explain the difference between love and lust. But in a similar way, we should not assume that we know what the activities are of child Krishna and his many parents. Parents doesn't mean only Mother Yasoda and Nanda, but anyone who wished and who perfected themselves was able to enter, and still is, Goloka Vrindavan in the rasa of a parent to Krishna. So the whole village who are in that rasa related to the child in that way. So again, what do we know in the material world about this rasa, this relationship? In some ways, Prabhupada has said that it even in the material world, it maintains some of its purity of love. He gives the example that in the material world, the love of a mother for the child has some semblance to pure devotion. It's not done to get a reward. The child doesn't give any reward, but still the mother wants to take care of her. But there's so many inebrieties in that relationship in the material world. Sometimes the mothers resent the children. We won't talk about real, extreme degraded relationships, but even in the so-called normal relationship, it's not the same. The child is often seen as a nonsense for his or her mischievous activities, and the parents are short-tempered with such behavior. So we can't just think it's the same way, take it cheaply. We may take it cheaply even in a positive way, that we laugh and we think it's nice the way Krishna behaves in a frolicsome way and everybody loves him. But the profound love that's actually experienced, satisfaction of the personality of Godhead with these devotees and their ecstasy in relation to him, is not tinged with sentimental, cuddly emotions, which are sometimes displayed between parents and their children in the material world, which in fact, as we said, Madhurya Rasa is the epitome of lust, and in Vedic scriptures often family attachment is described as the epitome of attachment. In other words, first there's sex attachment, and then children come. And that's the real Vidaya Grantha, the real knot is formed. One wants to hear the little talks of the children and be so enamored by them. And so it's a real material bondage. But this is not like this at all. So in appreciating these childhood lila, we should know that it's inconceivable and beyond us. But still we can, as with the other rasas, we can, if we're not offensive, enjoy hearing it. And by following the indications of Prabhupada and Sukadeva Goswami, understand that it is completely spiritual, it's not material. So here's a, I'll just read one paragraph to introduce. Another day, when Krishna and Balaram were playing with their friends, all the boys joined Balaram and told Mother Yasoda that Krishna had eaten clay. On hearing this, Mother Yasoda caught hold of Krishna's hand and said, "My dear Krishna, why have you eaten earth in a solitary place? Just see, all your friends, including Balaram, are complaining about you." Being afraid of his mother, Krishna replied, "My dear mother, all these boys, including my elder brother Balaram, are speaking lies against me. I have never eaten clay. My elder brother Balaram, while playing with me today, became angry, and therefore he has joined with the other boys to complain against me. They have all combined together to complain, so you will be angry and chastise me. If you think they are truthful, then you can look within my mouth to see whether I have taken clay or not." His mother replied, "All right, if you have actually not taken any clay, then just open your mouth, I shall see." So I just heard how you have all been, or just coming from a place connected to this pastime, where Mother Yasoda had her anxieties relieved about what danger Krishna had done to his digestive system by eating clay. So she's always motivated by this loving anxiety. That, and this is the way Vatsalya devotees express their love for Krishna. They want to protect him. Although he's the personality of God who protects everyone, they want to take care of him and protect him. And they think that if he doesn't eat nicely what they provide for him and take their protection, then he may suffer, he may die. So this is by Yoga Maya, Krishna allows them to do this. And we read about, especially in the case of Devaki and Vasudeva, how to become parents. They had to perform so many thousands of years of austerities to enter this kind of intimate relationship by Yoga Maya, where one is not praying to God for protection, but prays to be able to protect him. So this is going on here. This is the emotion of Mother Yasoda. This lila should be seen from Mother Yasoda's point of view as well as Krishna's point of view. She is the main parent. The mother is with the child much more than the father. And so this is her lila of seeing the universal form. Mother Yasoda is, Prabhupada says, one of the greatest exemplary devotees of prema bhakti, of pure love for Krishna. She's always either with Krishna, kissing Krishna, fondling Krishna, giving Krishna her milk, personally tending to his body, or if he's not there, she's worrying about him. And everybody in Vrindavan loves her. She's the queen of Braja. Even Srimati Radharani worships Mother Yasoda. And we see in the Krishna book later that every day the gopis, after they perform their early morning duties, they go to Mother Yasoda and Ananda and pay their obeisances to these worshipable parents of the Lord. So, also she's worried that he may be harmed, but also she has to be some kind of disciplinarian. So this is a disturbing incident that he's lying or he's not lying, and he's done such a nonsense thing as to eat dirt. Open your mouth. So with the, not just with anxiety as to the harm, but from the position of loving authority, she wants to take her boy in hand and see what is the actual situation. But the whole thing is love. So then, suddenly, the pastime changes from a very human-like situation of mother and child who she has by the hand into a completely mystical demonstration by Krishna that to show, which shows that he's not an ordinary child who has eaten dirt, but he is the source of all the universes, sarvakarana karana. He's the source of everything that be. So in this way, Krishna Lila typically shifts from the yoga maya affections, where the devotees take Krishna to be their beloved child or lover, and then suddenly Krishna demonstrating that he is not captured within that relationship entirely, but rather he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So how can he be seen as a child or a paramour? I have a few sections I would like to read from Prabhupada's treatment in the Srimad Bhagavatam of this, mainly to bring out a few lessons that we can apply in our own Krishna consciousness. So rather than dwell on a description of everything that was contained in the universal form, I would like to go to these particular sections. But as you know, when Mother Yasoda looked in, inconceivably, within that space of her child's mouth, she saw all the universe. How can that be? We cannot judge how within his mouth she could see all the stars and the planets in orbit and the sky, and then all the principles of existence, the material elements and so on, in subtle forms. And everything that exists was within that space. She even saw herself and Krishna. So she became very bewildered by this. And this bewilderment and her change of attitude based on this, Prabhupada makes a very, very interesting comment. In a sense, temporarily, Mother Yasoda disowns her intimate relationship and her very identity as the mother of the boy, as the queen of the village whose husband owns so many properties. She sees this as all like false ego, and the real situation is that she's just a tiny living entity in the universe, which she sees in the mouth of Krishna. So she doesn't know how this has come about, and she doesn't know what's even happening, whether she's crazy or what. So she's completely bewildered. But in this, so in her bewilderment, she expresses surrender under the personality of Godhead. She says in the verse, "Let me surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offer my obeisances unto Him who is beyond the conception of human speculation." So in the purport, Prabhupada says, when we are beset by some problem for which we can find no reason, there is no alternative than to surrender to the Supreme Lord and offer Him our respectful obeisances. Then our position will be secure. This was the means adopted in this instance also by Mother Yashoda. When the immediate cause, whatever happens, the original cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the immediate cause cannot be ascertained, let us simply offer our obeisances at the lotus feet of the Lord. When a devotee cannot ascertain the cause of suffering, he concludes, Tate nukampam sukshamikshamam. We should know that material suffering due to the material body will come and go. We must tolerate the suffering and proceed with discharging our duty as ordained by our spiritual master. So this is something that she did, which we can follow. We cannot imitate, or certainly we cannot try to become Mother Yasoda. But we want to gather relevant lessons from these pastimes at the same time that we just delight in them, to hear them in their own right. We're always looking how to improve our position of surrender. So when Mother Yasoda could not figure out the cause of this mystical phenomena, she just surrendered and said, Krishna, I don't know what's happening or why this is happening, but it must be your will. Whatever you want, let it be, and let me accept it, and let me go on serving you. So Prabhupada draws the lesson, and we may remember this. It doesn't have to be that we see something as privileged as a universal form, but whatever it is that bewilders us, and we don't know, why is this happening? I came out on Braj Mandak Parikram to be purified, but now I'm very agitated. Or I came to build my faith, now I have some doubt. Or I wanted this to happen, why is that happening? What is happening? Especially troublesome things. We try to find out the root, especially the Western mentality of troubleshooting, is to find out what is the cause of this problem and then let's fix it. But some things we cannot ascertain, why are they happening? So don't bother with it. Just surrender to Krishna and accept whatever is happening. And so Mother Yasoda did that. But then, so this was a very philosophical position on her part, but she did not maintain this very long, thinking that I'm not really anybody's mother, I'm not a woman, I'm not a village, I'm not the queen of this village, and so on. And Krishna, I have no relationship with Krishna. She didn't keep that very long because Krishna wanted to, again, bring her into the mother-child relationship. So that happened then, and she saw him again. The translation is, Mother Yasoda, by the grace of the Lord, could understand the real truth. But then again, the Supreme Master, by the influence of the internal potency Yogamaya, inspired her to become absorbed in intense maternal affection for her son. Purport. Although Mother Yasoda understood the whole philosophy of life, at the next moment she was overwhelmed by affection for her son by the influence of Yogamaya. Unless she took care of her son, she thought, how could he be protected? What this brings to mind is the simplicity of Mother Yasoda's love and how simple affection is actually very profound. It's the most profound thing in the world, in the spiritual world also. Simple affection. Now, it seems that this is something we can also relate to in our own way. It's similar to the previous point, but the previous point is a philosophical point, that when you can figure out the cause of something, then intellectually, we should ascribe it to the inscrutable will of God and just accept it. But on an emotional level, no matter what's happening, we should cling to our simple affection or devotion to our devotional service activities. You don't have to figure everything out always, and we can't. And even if we do, intellectually, that intellectual platform is not so satisfying at all times. So we have to nurture and live by just a simple attachment to a spiritual master, to Krishna, to whatever degree we understand Krishna, and to our devotional activities, whatever they may be, and just go on doing them through thick and thin. And then we will come under the internal energy, as Mother Yasoda does here. Although what she saw was so baffling, her simple affection was so strong that it overcame the other, and she said, well, it doesn't matter, all these things that I conclude and that are revealed to me, he's my son and I have to take care of him. And as Prabhupada says, now let this incident be forgotten, I do not mind, here is my son, let me kiss him. So we should pray for this bhakti in our own life, immediately. It is immediately accessible. I'll just make a one more selected point from these Srimad Bhagavatam purports. And this is in conclusion or in appreciation of Mother Yasoda's behavior in this universal form, pastime, Shukadeva Goswami and Srila Prabhupada give some estimation of her realization in Krishna consciousness. The verse is, "The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Samkhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature. Yet Mother Yashoda considered that Supreme Person her ordinary child." So, in the purport, Prabhupada tells of the three realizations, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And obviously, Mother Yasoda has surpassed a Brahman realization of the Absolute Truth, impersonal. She's also surpassed the yogic conception that God is present in the heart as Paramatma. But the surprising thing, as expressed by Prabhupada here, is that she also goes beyond Bhagavan realizations. Normally we may think, well, what is that? You can't go beyond Bhagavan realization, that's the ultimate realization. But it is explained here. Mother Yasoda surpassed all these stages, and therefore she is to be accepted to be on the highest stage of spiritual realization. The Absolute Truth is realized in three features, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shabjate. But she is in such ecstasy that she does not care to understand what is Brahman, what is Paramatman, or what is Bhagavan. Bhagavan has personally descended to become her beloved child. Therefore, there is no comparison to Mother Yashoda's good fortune. The ultimate stage of Prema Bhakti is demonstrated by Mother Yashoda. So what does it mean, beyond Bhagavan realization? It means beyond awe and reverence. Bhagavan is the personal form of God, possessing all six opulences. That's what the word Bhagavan means. Aishvara yasya samagrasya, virasya yasya satsriya, jnana vairagya. But when one appreciates this greatness of the personality of Godhead beyond Brahman and Paramatman, this is Bhagavan realization. And of course we should aspire to this, appreciating the greatness of God. In describing the opulences of Krishna in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says, it's very important to know the greatness of God. He's the greatest of anything that you find in the material world. It's an example of his greatness. So, if we don't understand the greatness of Krishna, we may take him cheaply, as the Sahajiyas do. But, at the same time, one has to go beyond this worship of God in awe and reverence. And that is the mood of Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, there's no worship of Krishna in this way, except in flashes, occasionally, as in the universal form, and then that's overcome. So he's not, he doesn't want to be appreciated as Bhagavan here. He wants to be appreciated as the child, as the paramour, as the friend wrestling, and so on. So it's a very exclusive realm within the spiritual world either. And those who worship Krishna in awe and reverence, they aspire and attain the worship of the Lord in Vaikuntha. In fact, Sachinanda Maharaj, I heard you are an expert in analyzing the anarthas of the different demons, and so I recall that one person who was not a demon, Lord Brahma, but he was also in anartha when he stole the calves and cows and boys, because he was not satisfied with seeing Krishna's pastime eating lunch, which seemed to be such an ordinary thing. He wanted to see something more glorious. Therefore, he played the trick. So the anartha, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur there, is the tendency to prefer Krishna's majesty rather than his sweetness. So he even describes it as an anartha. So it is, if not an anartha, it is something which will keep us out of the appreciation and love of Krishna as followed by the residents of Vrindavan and as taught by Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada, and Lokanath Maharaj was making a book about exclusive Krishna as Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna. So Vrindavan Krishna means beyond Bhagavan realization. And so this was appreciated here by the Acharyas in the case of Madhya Soda. And there's also a nice verse about Maharaj Nanda, that some sages, they worship the Absolute through the Upanishads and by studying all the Vedas. This is one way to go about it. But I think I will complete my worship and study just by worshipping Nanda Maharaj. Then everything will be achieved, because he has the Absolute Truth in his hand as his little son and is walking him in the courtyard. Here we're now in the courtyard of Krishna as a child. So because Nanda was so powerful, he captured Krishna in his hand. If I surrender to Nanda, then that's better than studying the Vedas or anything else, or practicing yoga. Therefore, the real conclusion of this pastime, or the wonderful thing, is not so much the universal form. Just as in Bhagavad Gita, the universal form is not the main business of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 11, but the bhakti that is preached by Krishna and which is followed by Arjuna. So similarly, the essence of this pastime is that the universal vision is given up as glorious as it is, as overwhelming as it is, and simple love triumphs. And Mother Yasoda says, "Let this incident be forgotten. Here is my son, let me kiss him." And I think, as I said in the beginning, you know these things better than I by walking day after day and seeing how one leela is connected to another and seeing the land and seeing the people and getting so many internal realizations of exactly this point, that that Krishna's human-like but supreme activities in Vrindavan are based on sweetness of a relationship between himself and his devotees, and that he's inviting us to join him by chanting, hearing, and serving Srila Prabhupada in this disciplic succession. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Yeah. Maybe there's some time for you to make some comments.
And ask other questions.
Right.
I thought you would talk longer, so that would give me time to prepare my question. The question is like this. That is also what you read from Prabhupada's Bhagavatam.
Yes.
Going beyond Bhagavan, which, and I understood and I appreciate that going to worshipping Krishna is that realization is even beyond Brahman, Paramatma, and even beyond Bhagavan. I understand the point. But I just argue, I just was wondering that in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami points out that Narayan has 60 qualities and Krishna has 4 additional qualities, including those like his childhood pastime, Leela Madhurya, he calls. The Leela Madhurya, there's a Rupa Madhurya form, there's a Venu Madhurya in the flute playing, and there is a Prema Madhurya. So especially this Leela Madhurya, his childhood pastime, this is the not found in any other incarnation. A very loving, beautiful practice. So doesn't that make Krishna, even as a child of Mother Yashoda or anybody, all the Pratibhasis also consider him as their child? doesn't that Krishna become more Bhagavan than Narayan Bhagavan? Narayan is also Bhagavan, and Krishna is also Bhagavan.
Yes.
So here we're talking about that relationship, going beyond awe and reverence, is going beyond Bhagavan.
So, I see. Because he not only has all the other 60 qualities of other forms of Bhagavan, but he has four more, which are sweet, madhurya. So, your point is that doesn't... He has additional, not that he has less. So isn't he super Bhagavan? So, that's what we say. Super Bhagavan means that he doesn't display them, and that the sweetness is so prominent that they're rather covered. But they're there. Otherwise, we'll be worshipping, as Prabhupada says, anthropomorphism is sometimes the charge, that we're worshipping an ordinary man or a paramour, a man who dances with other men's wives or something like that. But he's got all the qualities of Bhagavan, so whatever he does is absolute, is good, is liberating. But in this feature, in his original feature, he doesn't emphasize them, and his devotees are not attracted by them. So that confirms your point that he's not less by emphasizing the sweetness. He's not less, but he's more. And this is real greatness. Power is not greatness, but love and friendship with God, that's real greatness. The power is shown for lesser occasions or lesser persons who need to be moved by power or fear, rules and regulations. But with these devotees, so all the opulences are there, but they're not necessary for rasa, only the loving exchanges. Is that either your question was either your own, or it was like if someone else brought it up? Do you think that answers it, or would you like to answer it? How emphasizing the sweetness doesn't make him less than the other Narayans, but he just doesn't display forearms and so many things that may seem to be evidences of God, badges of, and signs of God. He doesn't seem to have them, but they are. But if you examine Goloka.
Super Bhagavan that explains, but he's a super Bhagavan.
Okay. There's that charge that Srinivasacharya makes that, because he is a Narada Muni and he appreciates Krishna in his opulent features more, and he says, he teases Swarup Damodar and says, your Krishna in Vrindavan, he's not very wonderful. There's, what is in Vrindavan? Just some few sticks and trees and a few wild flowers, and Krishna has some village girls, but I like to worship Krishna in Vaikuntha with palaces and so on. And then Swarup Damodar explains that actually in Vrindavan, what looks like trees and rural country and ordinary Krishna is actually filled with the greatest opulences of the ground is Chintamani and all desires are awarded and so on. He points out the inner nature of the prema in Vrindavan is superior to the opulence of Vaikuntha. But if you have that vision inspired by greatness and majesty, then you would see Vrindavan as, and Vrindavan Krishna as less than Narayan. As there's not as much God here, but it is more here.
Since quite some time I have the question if Krishna's activities here in Vrindavan are minus opulence, still we find often descriptions of acharyas where they describe that the bank of the river Jamuna is made from jewels, we find description of Krishna wearing in Vrindavan a golden crown, and in Aishwarya Kadambini by Baladev Vidyabhushana he describes golden hills. Can you answer the seeming contradiction? Is he now minus opulence here, or is he opulent? Then why is in Vrindavan do you find jewels and gold and these kinds of descriptions which Swarup Damodar seem to also indicate?
I'm not very realized in this subject, but about Baladev Vidyabhushana and that Aishwarya Kandimini, I've heard that the particular Siddhanta that he teaches there was done either in his mood, his own internal mood, or for a preaching purpose to prove or to express a vision of Vrindavan as opulent. But it's really not, that's not the Vrindavan mood that he's expressing. It's an exceptional that's an exceptional description that he gives, and you won't find that given or appreciated in Krishna book. More we hear, there are they put minerals on their body and they just grab what flowers are in the forest and they decorate themselves with flowers, and there's churning of butter and so on. That it's simple. But so at least based on that, I could understand that sometimes the acharyas or acharya like Baladev, to relieve any doubter of a possible misconception of the simpleness of Vrindavan, he explains it like that for that certain audience so that they could be satisfied. Perhaps it could be likened to Jiva Goswami's giving proof that Radha and Krishna were married, because some people, they just can't accept that they're not married. It just doesn't seem right. Although pure devotees know that the parakeya is perfect. But so he gave evidence that actually it's Swakiya, they're married. That's not the conclusion, but he thought that to protect the Leela, he should preach in that way. So at least I think Baladeva Vidyabhushana's expression is to give another viewpoint of Vrindavan. So certain devotees will be satisfied. Yes, this is better than anything in Vaikuntha. There's more gold here. It's not just the forest. He's not just a boy who's walking around barefoot, but he's got more riches and jewels than anybody. And then anyway, also even in the context of strict village Vrindavan description, there was a lot of wealth by cows and the byproducts of cows and land. They had all the wealth they needed by trading for other things, for cloth and jewelry and so on. So they weren't impoverished. But again, it's not material, so it's spiritual, and it can be one thing or it can